What was the inspiration behind Rough Aussies?
It was really, I'd made a film just before that in Cameroon called Sisters-in-Law, and I'd been really sort of impressed by the young women and girls that I'd met in Africa, and it seemed like there were all these amazing stories that just weren't being told about, well, I mean, Vera and Beatrice aren't exactly ordinary, but they're two amazing judges in Cameroon, but sort of ordinary people in ordinary jobs doing amazing things. So I was on the lookout for to make another film in Africa, and then Jackie came to see me. It was really strange. It's never happened to me like that before. She came and saw me in London and said, would I make a film about Bobby Bear? And it's not like, you know, normally people say, will you make a film about me? It's because they want publicity or anything like that. What it was that they're a really small group of women, and I think they feel like they're fighting on all fronts, and they needed the film to be able to send out instead of them, because they can't go everywhere in South Africa. It's such a huge country. So they're fighting social services, they're fighting business, you know, the people that are digging up the sand, for example. They're fighting the police, they're fighting the hospitals, they're fighting absolutely everything, and they just were feeling, we can't go on like this. We do need, you know, because they've been sending the film now into schools, they've been sending it all around. The film's been doing the work for them that they would normally have to go and talk to people, and it's been part of it. It's starting up a campaign about, you know, small businesses just taking resources and not putting anything back into the communities. And I think Jackie saw that, but I was a bit taken aback. I'm not used to people asking me to make a film about them. So I went with Paul Taylor, who's the producer. I went with him to Durban to meet them all. And I kind of fell in love with them. I just thought, my God, these women are amazing, because they're just exactly what you see in the film. They are extraordinary and very sort of down to earth and very warm and absolutely dedicated, completely dedicated to what they're doing. So it wasn't really a big decision to make. I just thought, I really want to make this film almost immediately.
Okay. This interview is going to air before the documentary airs on the 19th. So for the people that obviously haven't seen it yet, because it's only a small amount of people that have seen it at Sundance and things like that, can you just explain what Bobby Bear does, so this way the readers understand a little bit more?
The film's about Bobby Bear, which is a small group of women who rescue children, not necessarily just abused children, children that are in difficulties or any, they just rescue children, because the social services is very sort of threadbare in South Africa. South Africa's still recovering from apartheid, and it hasn't really got a good social services. But the film really doesn't, it's about that, but it's also about the Rough Aunties' lives themselves. So, because the society's so extreme that you can't live in South Africa and not be part of a battle yourself. So they're all battling on different fronts. Nodra's battling to leave her husband. Eureka, her son-in-law, gets shot in the middle of the filming, and you just see how tough life is for them. And people that have seen it, I mean, I really hope people don't think it's going to be a dreadful, sort of depressing film, because people that have seen it said, yes, it is tough. It's a tough watch. But it's also really inspiring to meet people like them and just to see that, you know, that they do have, every day that there's a terrible setback, there's also a small triumph. So you see the ups and downs. It's like a sort of roller coaster ride, I think.
Okay, absolutely. I mean, I agree with you perfectly, because I remember when I watched it, the first couple of minutes, I'm kind of like, okay, am I in the mood to kind of digest this? But after about 15, 20 minutes, you just see how endearing these characters are.
Yeah.
And how they're not characters, actually, that they're real people, and that they care that much. I mean, how did that make you feel, to just be a part of that, to watch that unfold?
Oh, Patrick, it was the most inspiring experience of my life. I just absolutely loved them. And they treated me as part of the team. So they were really happy. I never asked them to do anything or interviewed the kids or got them to do anything twice. And I know the beginning is quite tough. It's quite a tough beginning because we just wanted to get out right at the beginning how Bobby Bear works and why it's called Bobby Bear, and just to sort of get that out of the way. And then I think after that it does become much easier to watch. It's like the first 5 minutes is quite tough. But after that I think it's, because they're so full of humour and love and fun as well as being tough. You know, they are rough aunties. They're tough and they're tough and funny and, you know, fierce and, you know, I mean, they're just like my role models. Do you know what, Patrick? When I came back, I said, I'm never going to complain again now I'm home. Of course, you know, I discovered the boiler was broken. I was moaning within a day. But you know, they've really taught me something about how, you know, they've made me see my life in a different way. And also made me change a lot. But going there was a real change for me.
Okay, how did you change?
I didn't think, you know. Well, I suppose because they're fighting the culture of silence, you know, which is what they're really good about, and they're saying, look, it's not a shame to talk about being raped, you know, that it's not shameful to talk about things about what's happened to you, and they tell the kids, look, you're survivors, you're not victims. This whole anti-victim thing, and the way Mildred was so open about her own childhood, that, you know, I learned from them, because I think a lot of us have had some experience of abuse, and I was raped when I was a bit younger, and I feel now that if somebody asks me, I'll tell them that it's not, you know, that it's nothing to sort of, because in making it shameful and secret, we're just kind of giving the perpetrators more power, and I felt great about that, telling Mildred, and, you know, sometimes just, it's tough, but it's a good thing to do, because I think that's why it's so difficult to combat this. It's definitely in this country, you know, it's there's very few convictions, and but there's very little done about it, because people say, oh, you know, it's so, you know, we shouldn't talk out, it's so shameful and all of this, you know, and I think Bobby Bear's made me see it in a different light. And also it's made me respect children more, the way they respect children, and say that these kids are really proud to speak out and we're going to give them a voice. It's made me think that we protect children often in the wrong way. You know, because in this country we've had some very high-profile child abuse cases where the police and social services always talk to the parents and never ask the kids what was happening, and that's why it just went on and on and on and on. And never anything was done about it because they weren't respecting the children and talking to them.
Okay. You made a great comment earlier saying that, you know, the culture is just so different, and for anyone, you know, from the States or, you know, even in Europe, they'll feel that way in the beginning, the first five minutes when they go to the person's house, and the woman is defending her son, saying that,
yeah.
You know, that the child was molested before by somebody else, and they should go after that. I mean, that's just so counterculture to what, you know, someone would expect. How did that make you feel when you watched that for the first time?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, Patrick, that all the time I was there and everything that happened, I thought how similar it was to Britain. It's just a more extreme example of it. Because we have, I mean, child abuse is everywhere. And often people do terrible things and their parents protect them and make allowances for them. You know, why are there, you know, when you get a stabbing or a shooting in this country, often the perpetrators go free because nobody dares stand up against them. And that mother was just saying, I mean, it's a more extreme version of what we have in this country that, you know, I mean, that was particular, that one where she's saying that the father's sick does it themselves. But
yeah.
Why is it that it goes on for so long unreported? You know, we've had loads of cases recently. You've had the whole thing about the Catholic Church as well, where these cases just go on and on and on, and people listen to us. They have this fear of authority, and the priests, you know, tell the children, don't tell anyone. It just goes on. Do you know what I mean? It's people not daring to stand up and not wanting to sort of go against this whole thing of silence. Do you see what I mean? In different forms.
Absolutely.
You know, that mother was very weird saying that, I must admit.
Yeah.
You know. There's no way you can defend her. But in other ways, you know, Nancile, the girl with learning difficulties, she'd been being raped all her life. And the turning point was when she said what they've been doing to me is wrong, what he did is wrong. And being able to say, look, it's wrong, and I'm going to stop it, was a big turning point for her, you know.
Okay, as in most documentaries, it takes a long time to put together all the content, and editing is often an arduous task. I mean, you have to just find a way to make everything work. What was it like editing this this piece?
Oh, well, I've got this absolutely brilliant editor called Ollie Huddleston. He did it very quickly because the film's very, it's almost chronological. And it's very difficult to cut it not chronological because, you know, each case has got a beginning, middle and end. And Mildred, you know, what happens to Mildred at the end, I won't give the end away, but she says at the beginning she's going to leave her husband and you don't know whether she is or not until the very end. And the same thing with Eureka's son-in-law being shot. You don't know if he's going to die and then you don't know what happens next. And, you know, all the things that happen are in an order so that when they're by the river, Eureka says, oh, too many deaths this week, Jackie. You can't have that earlier or later. It has to be where it is. Do you see what I mean? So
yeah.
It wasn't a tricky film to edit. And what Ollie does is he edits in this very, in a quite a filmic way. He edits it as very much like a fiction film, so that you just get involved in the action and there's no sort of commentary or, you know, because sometimes people say, oh, we should have a commentary on the beginning saying how many rapes there are in South Africa. So I feel like saying to them, oh, do you want commentary at the beginning of Sopranos saying how many mafia there are? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Just because it's documentary, why do you want statistics, facts and figures? Or in Mad Men, wanting to know, you know, figures about racism at the beginning of Mad Men.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I like the subtlety of the way he edits, so that you make, and it makes you able to make connections with your own life and your own experiences. So, for example, when we showed the film at Sundance, Mildred was just coming out of the cinema, and this young girl ran up to her and immediately hugged her and said, I'm so proud of you, Mildred. I've just told my dad that I've been raped, you know. So it's a kind of great, it makes it more universal if you're not thinking, oh, South Africa's different. It's specific, it's different, this is all South Africa. It's all about very, and it's not just about rape, it's about so many things. It's about finding your own strengths and lots of other things. So hopefully people will relate to the people in the film as individuals, and like it could be her sister. She said Mildred was her big sister, which is so sweet. You know, that hopefully that will happen because you're not getting statistics and figures and making feel it's a kind of, I don't like those sort of films. You feel like you're at school again and you're being taught something, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, there's no real cliché feeling while you're watching the documentary, and often a lot of documentaries fall into that category where they have to throw statistics in the beginning, or they have to throw statistics in at the end, or something like that. This feels much more like it's shot in like a first-person like narrative kind of form, and it feels very comfortable because of that, and very, it's very.
Yeah, that's really nice of you to say. I mean, we never set up any of the interviews. I never said Mildred. I mean, not really interviews. It happened completely naturally that Mildred was obviously upset about something and wanted to talk. So there's a couple of talks, but not many. And they're not sort of, there's no interviews or doctors in white coats telling you about, you know, I don't know what they get. But we'd wheel in doctors to tell you things. You haven't got any of those things in.
Absolutely. Okay, this is a very difficult question, but if you had if you had to pick, who would be your favorite auntie and why?
It was Mildred. It was just because I sort of fell in love with Mildred immediately. It was an immediate thing. You know, it's like if you go to a party or if you go to your first day at school and it's just this gut thing.
Uh-huh.
And it was this immediate thing that I just loved Mildred from the minute I saw her. It was just an immediate thing. And I just thought, I want to be your friend, I want to get to know you. And making the film was getting to know her. And she used to ring me every morning at 6, because she gets up at 4, and say, what are you doing? And I'd be very grumpy and say, I've just woken up. But, you know, she really took me into her life, and she's such a warm, funny, fantastic, lovely person. You know, she's better than I could ever say, you know. And made me feel very... She sort of made me feel very small also, but she never did it on purpose. But just when I saw how tough her life was and how open and giving she was and how easy my life is in comparison, you know, it was an extraordinary experience getting to know her, really. I don't know if you remember at the beginning when she's hanging out the washing. That's what she does every morning before she goes to work.
Wow.
From a little tap that just dribbles water out and cold water. And then she walks all the way down to the road to get a car to take her to, you know, she walks something like 4 kilometres to get to where she can get the road and get a, you know, like a, they have these buses to get into work, changes twice, You know, there's never any food in her house. I mean, it's just a really tough life. And yet when I first met her, she was in this kind of white shirt and looking really smart. I'm always really scruffy, and she looked so gorgeous, you know. And then when I discovered where she'd come from, it was a real, I thought, my God, you know, I really admire her.
Okay, so how does it feel to have the film picked up by HBO and having it screened on HBO?
Well, I love it because all my favorite programs are on HBO. Apart from True Stories on Channel 4, which is great. It's a documentary series. But I love, I mean, HBO is so, the telly on HBO is so brilliant. Well, I love Larry David, of course.
Yes, of course.
You know, I adore him. I've watched everyone 3 or 4 times, you know. I'm a big Larry David fan. But Mad Men, I don't know if you've seen those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which are so subtle. And it's very sophisticated TV. It's very subtle. It, the whole thing I was saying about racism, the way it was so cleverly and gently done, just the comment to the guy in the lift, and then Betsy telling her maid to turn the radio off because of something. Your program. Listen to your program, you know, about Selma, Alabama, about the girls that have been killed. And then saying, oh, I think civil rights is wrong because it just causes violence. But very subtly done. And those little things, it's so, we've got so much to learn from the way Mad Men is done. Beautiful slow shots and beautiful editing. The Wire, Sopranos, of course, which is, you know, my dad. I just love Sopranos. I love the way it dealt with the mafia in such clever. It was so cleverly done.
Yes.
You know, it didn't. You learned so much in such a kind of lateral way. And it's everything I'm trying to do with documentaries, what those programs are doing, and that, yet they're fiction. They're just taking you into a world and not sort of pushing you. They're opening a window and letting you through it. They're not feeding you anything. Do you see what I mean? And that's why they're well ahead of what we're doing in this country.
Okay, absolutely. Is there anything else?
So nice to talk about HBO. Nobody ever talks about
here. I can talk about HBO all day. I was actually just watching The Wire a couple of hours ago.
Oh, God, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I love McNulty.
I was shocked. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
And the character.
It's not on anymore, you know?
Oh, I know. I've got the box set.
Oh, man. But yeah, a bunch of my friends and I at work, we always talk about McNulty, how he's always just getting into trouble. It's just fantastic. You're just waiting to see what he does
next.
Oh,
I know, exactly.
Dominic.
No, they're great. The characters are great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Is there anything else that you want to say about the documentary that we haven't touched base on yet?
I think really it's just mostly that thing, Patrick, is that what I'm trying to do with this documentary, I'm trying to... And I don't know, I'm not there nearly yet, but I'm trying to make it like watching The Sopranos. Not obviously not with, well, there are a couple of murders in it, actually, when you think of it. But I was going to say without the murders, but there are a couple of murders in the film. That's true, I haven't thought of that before. But like watching Sopranos or Mad Men or, you know, one of those that you just watch it in a different way. You're not watching it. Because it does upset me sometimes when people say, oh, we wanted to know, you know, we wanted the context of South Africa. You know, we want to be told about apartheid. Or that's not what films can do. You can look on the net, you can find out all that stuff. And it's not what Sopranos or Mad Men does. You know, but you watch them and you find out so much more if you watch with an open mind and just let it sink into your mind and make it to relate to you in your own life. You know, that's how I hope people will watch it. And that's why I think I feel so grateful to HBO for those programs, because they're just shining examples of what, you know, cinema can do, really. So I suppose I think of Rough Aunties as a TV film in a way that they're TV films. You know, I hope I'm sort of getting there, but I'm still learning, really.